Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome everyone to the On Poly podcast. I'm Steve Paikin.
And I'm John Michael McGrath.
Most of us are still playing by the rules in the province of Ontario, but just to the east of us in Quebec, some folks are on the verge of mutiny. They intend to defy provincial protocols and keep their businesses open, insisting they are not part of the COVID problem. That, plus an interview with Ontario's 25th Premier, who this past week confirmed this will be her last term at Queen's Park. It's Tuesday, October 27th, 2020, so let's get to it. Well, a group of 200 gym, yoga, dance, and martial arts businesses in Quebec have said they have had it with the closures. They are planning to defy the Quebec government and reopen their doors. They say they feel as if their businesses are being unfairly punished, that they actually contribute to the health of the province by letting people do physical, active things, helping with their mental health as well. JMM, you picking up any similar kinds of rumblings of mutiny here in Ontario?
Well, certainly there are many restaurant owners and operators in Toronto and Peel and Ottawa and York, the areas of the province that are currently shut down, where you've definitely heard owners saying, you know, hey, we followed all the rules. Why are we being punished? And I think it can be very frustrating to people in these sectors when, you know, two things can be true at the same time, where most, you know, or a large fraction of cases can come from a specific sector, like bars and restaurants, say, even at the same time as the vast majority of bars and restaurants are operating safely and following all of the best practices. So, yes, I mean, we have heard some grumblings along these lines, but before TVO's lawyer gets any heartburn listening to this, we should probably say we do not advise this. In Ontario, defying orders made under the province's emergency measures legislation comes with a fine of up to $10 million for corporations or $500,000 for officers of a corporation. Individuals can also be hit with a one-year term in jail. So these are, you know, really serious penalties and among the stiffest in Canada right now. So if there's anybody who's within the sound of my voice who is thinking about, you know, maybe following some of these angry business operators in Quebec and going rogue, shall we say, really a risky play, even aside from this whole pandemic thing. But of course, not everybody is as well-versed in the legalese around government pandemic controls as you and I are, Steve. So it's certainly not hard to imagine small businesses out there looking at the results of, you know, the last few weeks of shutdowns in Toronto and Ottawa especially, and thinking, hey, you know, I don't care what the premier says. I've got to open my doors. I got to get, you know, money coming back in the door. It's better than, frankly, watching your life's work go down the drain and having to file for bankruptcy.
Well, and particularly if you just spent, as many businesses have, thousands and thousands, and in some cases, tens of thousands or more, trying to, you know, retrofit your business so that it would be appropriate to the protocols of the new COVID-19 era in which we live. And this no doubt partly explains why we saw a bit of a debate among the Progressive Conservative MPPs at Queen's Park last weekend. I'll mention two of them here, Jane McKenna, who represents Burlington, and Parm Gill, who represents Milton. They co-signed a letter, along with a number of others, asking the province's Chief Medical Officer of Health, Dr. David Williams, to provide more evidence before pushing Halton Region into the modified stage two that, you know, we know that Toronto, Peel, York, and Ottawa are already in. Now, the Premier addressed this during his daily briefing yesterday. What did he have to say about it all?
You know, this was a bit of an interesting wrinkle in the story because, of course, when a letter like that comes out, the natural inclination, and I think the plain reading of the facts, was that there seemed to be some division between the premier and at least some members of his caucus at Queen's Park. And on Monday, the premier came out for his afternoon press conference, as he has done so often lately, and said, no, everybody's on the same team here. The premier, in fact, asked those MPPs to write the letter in the first place, saying that, you know, he's quite happy to let MPPs and local elected officials, you know, make their case to the public health officers, whether they're local public health or the provincial public health. So, an interesting little wrinkle in the story. It is still confusing to me if everybody is on the same team, if everybody is singing Kumbaya. There are two other progressive conservative MPPs from Halton Region who did not sign the letter. And so were they not invited, or what's going on there? It's kind of confusing. But, you know, this is what it looks like when elected representatives are, you know, pushing back a little, representing their constituents, saying like, hey, hang on, do we have to go into stage two the way Toronto has things in Halton? You know, yes, the numbers are frankly, you know, not where we want them to be, but does it have to be, you know, a full scale reversion to that modified stage two? You know, the premier said on Monday that, yes, he's listening to medical advice. Yes, he's listening to scientific advice. But local elected officials are obviously always going to have a role in this as well.
Well, let me follow up with a couple of things here. Number one, we often give MPPs, as I like to call it, HE double hockey sticks, when they all sort of, you know, what did you say? Sing around the campfire singing Kumbaya, yes. And they don't think for themselves. Right. So we like it when they actually, you know, think about issues, consider issues. And if they have a different view from, let's say, what other people in the caucus have, or God forbid, the premier's office, they express that. We like that. We like when that happens. I think their constituents like when it happens, but by the same token, it does cause a problem in the eyes of party unity. You know, one of the truisms of the way we do Westminster-style politics here in this parliamentary system is that everybody's supposed to be singing out of the same hymn book, and when they're not, it can be a problem. So, on the one hand, yes, two of the four Halton Region MPPs did sign this letter saying, please hold off on just putting the whole region into modified stage two. And on the other hand, there were two others who represent people in Halton who did not sign the letter. And to my knowledge, so far have not taken a public position on any of this. So do we know anything about, I don't know, there's a bunch of questions here. Do we know why two of them did and two of them didn't? Or do we know what the views of the two who didn't are? And if they're different from the two who did sign, but they just don't want to go public with it because they think this kind of stuff should be hashed out in caucus? And you can see there, I mean, there's myriad questions around all this.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, it's possible that the most accurate explanation is also the most boring one, that these two MPPs who did not sign the letter thought that it was best to air their grievances or their reservations in private with the premier or in caucus rather than sign a letter in public.
Even if they have them. We don't even know that they have them.
Well, exactly, right. The other possibility, and this, you know, gets maybe more speculative, but also a bit more interesting. The two letter signatories, MPPs McKenna and Gill, have political careers that precede Premier Ford, at least in provincial politics. Jane McKenna was an MPP from 2011 to 2014. She was defeated by a Liberal in 2014 and then came back in 2018. And Parm Gill was an MP from 2011 to 2015 federally. So they have a certain amount of political capital that is independent of the current leader of the Progressive Conservative Party. And that's, frankly, a nice place to be if you're an elected official. You have a little bit of ability, and we probably can't, you know, we shouldn't overstate this. They're still team players. They're still all running under the same banner. But you'd have a little bit of an ability to push back against a decision made at cabinet and say, well, hang on a second. That's not what my constituents want, and that's not what they elected me for. And maybe not so subtly, I have been elected before you were on the scene, and I may be elected again when you lose. So, you know.
I'm not sure they'd put it in quite those terms, but yes, I hear you.
No, of course they wouldn't say it like that exactly, but then if everybody is professionals about this, you don't need to say this stuff out loud, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, this will be a story worth following, and we'll continue to watch it for our On Poly podcast listeners. Let's switch gears a bit right now and talk about not Ontario's 26th premier, who has the job now, but the 25th premier, Kathleen Wynne. Last week, she announced that this will be her last term at Queen's Park, and she will not seek re-election in 2022. And JMM, just before we throw to this interview that I did with her a few days ago, you got a Kathleen Wynne story you want to share?
You know, the one that I tend to think about a lot is in early 2016, I believe January, February 2016, we had Wynne on the agenda. And I was asked at the time to go down and watch from the studio and just tweet out anything interesting that she said. Now, I'm going to be honest with you, Steve. My daughter was still less than 6 months old at that point, and I really don't remember anything about that interview specifically. but at the end of it, the premier saw me as she was leaving the studio and asked, you know, how I was doing as a new parent, and it was very kind, and I said something to the effect of, you know, it's tough, but the good thing is that my daughter's a champion sleeper, which is true, and a salvation at that time. And the Premier of Ontario, leader of a province of 14 million people, commanding a budget of, you know, $100 billion plus, she looked at me and she gasped just a little, and she said, a good sleeper? I never got one of those.
You shared a genuine parenting moment there with the outgoing premier, right?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I don't mythologize the people that we cover. They are people and they have both good and bad motives. But it was a very nice moment to share with the premier. And I think about that moment a lot.
Yeah, there are kind of dozens of moments that come to mind for me. But let me hone in on the last one. The last one I remember her doing as Premier of Ontario. And that is her, I guess she had a news conference the day after. You were there, so yes. Help me with the chronology here. It might have been the day after the election, maybe a few days after.
I think it was a few days after. But
a few days after. Yeah. Okay. Before the actual little speech that she gave and then Q&A from the media, before the press conference actually started, she walked behind the cameras to where all the media were gathered, you know, because she'd be the only one on camera and all the rest of us scummy reporters, we just stand behind the cameras. And she walked up to every single reporter and camera person in that gathering and shook hands with all of them and thanked them for covering her government, which I thought was a particularly classy thing to do, given that most of the people, and you were no exception, my friend, most of the people who were there, you know, would have written and said and broadcast and so on some pretty, pretty tough things about her government over the previous 5 years that no doubt contributed to her defeat. And anyway, I thought that, as final moments in the office go, that one was pretty impressive, I have to say.
It was. And I also had cause to think of that recently. There was a, I won't dwell on it too much except to say that there was a conservative minister who did not like the tone of a question that she got from a reporter and walked out of a press conference last week. And I don't think that was a particularly professional way to handle media relations. And it did remind me of the former premier's, more genuine respect for the media.
Well, it reminds me of what Donald Trump did to Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes the other day. So frankly, there's a lot of that going around. Okay, let's get cut to the chase here. I spoke to Kathleen Wynne about her decision to step down. So here is our interview with the former premier and still current MPP for Don Valley West, Kathleen Wynne. I guess the first thing that I want to know about this announcement that you made is why you made it now, because we're, of course, more than a year and a half away from the next election. So why did you feel you had to tell people now that you weren't going to run again?
Yeah, I felt I had to tell people a couple of reasons. I had to tell my riding association, Steve, because they were asking questions. And as you well know, nomination races take some time to put together and to execute. And so there are people all over the province who are thinking about whether they will run or not. And so I knew that was starting to happen in Don Valley West. You know, the question was, is Kathleen going to run, and therefore should I be thinking about this? So I told my riding association a bit over a week ago, and once I had done that, I knew that the information would become public, and it did. And so I didn't have a press conference to make the announcement. I just talked to some reporters, and the news became public. I don't think it was a huge shocker to anyone, if I may say, or it shouldn't have been.
Not a huge shocker, but you've been in public life for 2 decades, and I wonder if it was a difficult decision at all.
It was a difficult decision. It is a difficult decision to leave this job, Steve. I love it. I worked very hard to get here. And once I had decided in the 90s that that I wanted to be in public office, I always thought I would be at the local level, which is why I ran for school trustee in 94, lost that election, and then ran again in 2000. And I did love being a school trustee, but by then I had decided that if we were going to do what needed to be done in education, in my opinion, it needed to be done from the provincial level, and that's where I wanted to be. So once I had decided that I wanted to get to the provincial level, I worked very hard to get here. I had to win an election against a Tory cabinet minister. And, you know, there were lots of voices saying, you know, a lesbian can't win in North Toronto, you should move, you have to be realistic, and on and on and on. And so it was an uphill battle, but one that I'm really glad I fought. And so from that time in 2003, I have loved the connection with my constituents. I love the policy work. I always say that being able to talk about real issues with people, to have the excuse to do that and to help them resolve their issues it's a huge privilege. So yes, I'm going to miss it enormously.
Well, you not only beat a former Tory cabinet minister, you beat a former Tory leader as well, who's now the mayor of Toronto.
That did come later. Yes.
Yes. Now, did you give Stephen Del Duca, the current leader, a heads up on your announcement?
Yes. So Stephen knew that he knew when I had told my riding association. I called him and I called John Fraser, who's our leader in the House. And I told both of them that I had done that, and that we should expect that there might be a leak of that information. And so nobody in the party was surprised.
How did Stephen react to it?
Stephen has been great. I mean, Stephen has basically said, Kathleen, you need to do what you need to do, you know? And I made it clear to him that I was going to stay for this term, if that was in the best interest of the party. Because I also said to him, if at some point you think it's better for me to leave and for us to trigger a by-election, if that's what the party wants to do, then I'm willing to step aside, because I think that it is quite clear that they need to, you know, the leader and his team need to make those decisions. But I was determined to stay if that was going to be in the best interest of the party, and he knew that.
Well, I thought he might actually try to convince you to stay on even longer and run again, because, needless to say, that's a hard seat for the Liberals to hang on to if you're not there. So I wonder if he was worried about that.
Well, I hope that it's not, Steve. I mean, I know people have said that. I mean, it was a Tory seat for a long time before I got here, but it's been a federal Liberal seat for a long time before that. So, you know, John Godfrey had been here for a while, but before I ran. But every seat is a battle, and we need to find the right candidate. And I will do everything I can to support that person. I have had a few people say to me, why don't you stay? We need you to stay. But I've made the decision. And I know that I'm a young 67, or people say that to me. I will be 69 by the time the election comes around. I think it's time for the next generation. I really feel strongly about that in my case.
Well, humor me here for a second, because you are following in the tradition of the last 11 premiers in a row, none of whom ran for re-election after losing the premiership. The last guy who actually ran for re-election after losing the premiership was Bob Nixon's father, and that was 75 years ago. So you are in a fine tradition that has been adhered to for 7.5 decades. But even at 69, you'd be a long way away from being the longest MP, the oldest MPP ever. So did you ever entertain the idea of running again in 2022?
I did. And those first, so on election night in June of 2018, I had no intention of stepping out of my seat. I resigned as leader, or told people in Ontario that I was not going to be the leader any longer. But I, at that point, I was waiting to make the decision. You know, I hadn't decided what I would do. But once once I got back into my office, once I was back at the legislature, even though it was tough, Steve, those were very tough weeks, you know. It had been a horrible defeat, and I felt responsible, and I felt that I needed to just sort out my own emotional state before I made a decision, you know. And once I got back into my office and into the legislature, I really felt strongly that it was important for me to stay, you know, that I could add some value, that I could ask questions that were relevant, that I could support members of the team who weren't as experienced, that I could help John Fraser in his time as interim leader. And those are the things I've tried to do while I've served my constituents. We have not closed my office for one day. There's always been somebody in my office, even through the pandemic. And, you know, people need that kind of support. So I'm glad I stayed, but I did think long and hard about whether I would run again in 2022. And I feel that there's a role for me to play now in another venue to lend my experience to people, to answer their questions, to help young people. I'm doing a lot of speaking with young people. I'm going to be talking with some poli-sci students this week about the experience of being in office. People have a lot of questions about that and about our policies, and I'm interested in doing that work now, and I think it's better for me not to be in office while I do that.
I'm not done with you having to humor me, though.
Okay.
So here we go for another follow-up. You know, you pointed out you're a young 67 right now, which you are. I assume you're still jogging every day.
I'm still
almost
running
every day.
Yeah, as often as I can, yeah.
Okay. Not to put too fine a point on it, but you are more than a decade younger than the guy who could be the next president of the United States. And I point out here that Frank Miller, who's a former premier, ran for district chair of Muskoka after his premiership was over. If you want to go further back, John Quincy Adams, after he was president of the United States, ran for Congress successfully. So I guess I ask you, can you imagine that your political career is 100% over right now?
And you didn't even mention Hazel McCallion.
Well, Hazel was the mayor well into her 90s,
yeah,
wasn't she?
Yeah. I can't imagine not being involved in politics in some way, Steve. I don't know what that means. I don't know whether it is confined to what I was just talking about, advising young people, having those conversations. I don't know what else it will be. But I feel like I have put my family and myself through enough years of being preoccupied and really being obliged to respond to the public in a way that takes me away from my family. I've done that for long enough. It will be 22 years. And even before that, I mean, we say 22 years, even before that, when I was involved as a community activist and I was working with John Sewell, you know, it was all involving. It took all of me. And it meant my focus was not with my family. And so people say, you know, politicians say, I want to spend more time with my family. That's true. That's really a true thing, you know, because at the end of my life, I don't want to feel regret about that. And I don't feel regret about my political life. I think that I have worked as hard as I possibly could. And now I need to figure out what the next chapter is.
Well, I think one of the most interesting things that took place over the past week were the comments of the current Premier of Ontario when asked about you. He had some unusually genteel things to say about the fact that only you and he and, you know, 24 others have walked in those shoes.
You know, there's certain decisions and there's one person. Matter of fact, there's only 25 other people in the history of this province knows how it feels when you're getting calls every single night. You have to make a decision. And Kathleen, when you make a decision, you know, one decision, there's 10 other reactions. And then you make another decision, 10 other reactions. And you have to weigh this out. And at certain times, the weight of the world is on your shoulders. And sometimes you sit back and you balance it and you say, no matter what I do, you know, there's gonna be an issue. But you have to go and show leadership. And throughout the time the former premier was there, She showed leadership. Again, we might have disagreed, but she showed leadership because she made a decision, right or wrong. And for that, I respect your service. I respect the years that you've spent down here serving your constituents. So thank you. God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
What did you think of that when you heard Doug Ford's comments?
Well, I thanked him for them. I thought he was being very gracious. I think that he's been through a really rough 7 months, you know, and I think his perspective on the complexity of the job has changed. That's my take. I don't know, but that's what I see. And I think that he has a new appreciation for what it means to listen to people. You know, the fact that he has worked as closely with Chrystia Freeland. Now it's expedient, you know, you as the Premier of Ontario, it is better for the people of Ontario if you have a working relationship with the Prime Minister and his or her team. But I think that he has genuinely embraced that. And I think he's done a good job there. But I wouldn't want anyone to think that that there isn't an edge to this. You know, when he made those nice comments about me in the legislature, he took a swipe at Andrea Horvath, the leader of the opposition, at the same time. So there's definitely some utility for him in making a comparison between me and her, and that sheds her in a shadow and me in the light. I'm leaving. I'm not going to be his competition. She is. And so it's not a pure thing, Steve.
Well, nothing in politics is, but that seemed about as genuine as Doug Ford gets. And it really did seem like it came from the heart.
I agree. And we'd had a moment a couple of weeks before that where I'd asked him a question and I had acknowledged the complexity of what he was doing. And that was when he first made the comment about us walking in each other's shoes. He said me walking in his shoes. I like to think of it as him walking in my shoes, but never mind. I think there is a genuine appreciation, and I have thanked him for that. I just put that little qualifier on it.
Are you yet at the point where you are starting to consult ex-premiers on how to structure your post-political life?
I already had some of those conversations earlier on. It's interesting because I think some of the former premiers thought that I would be leaving earlier, you know, or that was the conversation. I've had a meeting with Dalton. He and I have spoken, you know, pretty regularly. We're in touch. I've had a chat with David Peterson. I sat down with Lynn McLeod early on. I know she wasn't the premier. I always say I wish I had been the second female premier in Ontario because I love Lynn and I think she's terrific. So she and I had a conversation when I was trying to decide about staying in the legislature, and she encouraged me to do it. And that actually meant a lot to me. And some of what those men have gone on to do is relevant and some of it's not. David Peterson was a lot younger than I was. He's a lawyer, you know, he had a different role that he wanted to take on. I think what Dalton has done in terms of being involved with some not-for-profit organizations and keeping his hand in with education, the education agenda, those things appeal to me. But we each have to chart our own path, Steve. You know, we each have our own life experience. And so my connections and my path are different than those other guys.
Well, the regular path seems to be get ensconced at a big name law firm, get as many board directorships as you can, and then go out and make some money. That doesn't feel like your path.
No, that's not what I'm going to do. Even if it were a path that was open to me, and maybe it is, but it's not what I'm interested in doing. And I have fewer years in which to do this next set of things. And you know, for example, I've got a whole bunch of boxes of papers from my family that have been accumulated over the years. And I've never gone into them and read the letters from my grandfather when he was in the First War and letters from my grandmother who taught in Sault Ste. Marie. She grew up in Watford and she taught in Sault Ste. Marie in 1920. You know, I mean, I'm really interested to look at some of that stuff and see how my own story connects with theirs and where that takes me. I have no idea where that will take me.
Well, whatever the path looks like, we wish you well on it, and we're grateful for your time for this podcast interview. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Steve. Take care.
That was Kathleen Wynne, the 25th Premier of Ontario and the MPP for Don Valley West.
You know, it's interesting, JMM. Doug Ford, during this pandemic, has truly learned what it means to be, quote unquote, the decider. Because let's face it, everybody else gives advice, but the one person who decides on policy ultimately at the end of the day is the premier. And balancing all the competing interests in society is not an easy job, right? Do I lean in on safeguarding people's health? And if I do, what will that do to small businesses? Or if I don't, what might that do to the resources of the hospitals in the province? Harry Truman was right when he said the buck stops here. And that is something that Doug Ford, you know, in the last couple of weeks has pointed out on a few occasions that he shares with Kathleen Wynne, that they may agree on nothing on politics, but he knows what it's like to have to walk a mile in her shoes and she in his shoes. The buck stops with them indubitably.
You know, it is a tough job. And before I get too sympathetic, because I'm not sure sympathy is always what's called for, it's a tough job, but Doug Ford wanted it. And, you know, I don't think that anybody ever plans for these kinds of events. Certainly nobody in the 2018 election, I think, was voting based on, okay, but what if there's a pandemic? If you were, but congratulations on your prescience. But it is also the kind of situation we find ourselves now in where government is also most important. You know, if it were, frankly, more boring times, more normal times, it would also just, these decisions wouldn't matter as much. But we are in the midst of this moment where government and the decisions that government makes and really the decisions that a handful of individuals make, they matter so much. And something that I think you're right, both Kathleen Wynne and Doug Ford really have a unique perspective on.
You can't say this often, but there are rare moments in the history of the province of Ontario where the decisions made at the cabinet table or right now at the health table and ultimately in the premier's office can mean the difference between life and death. And yep. I'm not being overly dramatic here, but this is clearly one of those moments. And you're right. They all line up for the job. They all want the job. But at a moment like this, they can have it. That's a tough job. Anyway, we always conclude this podcast with our favorite quotes of the week, and we'll have that immediately after we ask you to give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. You can let us know what you liked or what you didn't, and it helps make our little podcast just a little bit better.
If you'd like to send us a comment, shoot us an email at onpolitics@tvo.org or tweet at us. I'm at JM_McGrath.
And I'm at S. Paikin. That's S-P-A-I-K-I-N.
Subscribe to the On Poly podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app.
Here now, my quote of the week. This is Doug Ford really teeing off on insurance companies last week after hearing more and more stories that small businesses couldn't get the insurance that they need. Here's the premier.
So I'll give you an example, banquet halls that can't get insurance or they're charging hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars or stories of stores not being able to get insurance. I'm fed up with these guys. You know, they're gouging the people and made a fortune over all these years. And I've just had it with these insurance companies. They need to come to the table, start supporting people insuring. They're absolutely just refusing to insure people. Like, we don't play that game. You don't get, by the way, the insurance companies, you guys don't get to get all the cream and gravy and the whipped cream and just slough off everything else and think we aren't going to insure it.
That's Doug Ford telling insurance companies they'd better get their acts together or else.
And my quote of the week, we've talked about this a bit already, is from Premier Ford explaining on Monday how he asked his MPPs to write a letter demanding more transparency or more clarity on what is going on with the public health measures in Halton region.
So I suggested to write a letter. Write a letter, let your local chief medical officer be aware of how you feel and other mayors feel and our MPPs feel. I spoke to one of my great MPPs, Jane McKenna, and said, I encourage you to write the letter. Somehow that got twisted around in words and certain local media outlet that we weren't together.
And that's from Premier Doug Ford on Monday at Queen's Park.
And so ends episode 85 of the On Poly podcast, produced by Katie O'Connor with editing wizardry from Matthew O'Mara. Our production support coordinators are Nikki Ashworth and Jonathan Hallowell, and JMM, as I end every episode by quoting my sage father, Stay positive, test negative.
Stay safe, Steve.